host Tony Yang. And once again with me is Alex Cortez and Clark Price. How are you guys doing?
Maskless.
Clark.
Yeah, that's you know, I pick up prescriptions at Costco, and I went there tonight, and I didn't know if they were going to be masked or not. Well, as it turned out, everybody in there was wearing masks. Now, I don't know if they were mandated, but it's like people are well trained now and they'll just wear their masks. And also, Alex, you and I have discussed the weird benefits, the unexpected benefits of wearing masks, and that is we don't get sick. And that's kind of a benefit. Also, I have the added allure of wearing a mask where I can, I think that people can wonder whether or not I'm stunningly handsome underneath it. And so that's a joke. Anyway, the
common cold is making a return as people go maskless. I just want you to know. Rhinovirus is coming right back.
How could it not?
Well, that kids are back in school. Kids are coming back.
That's all I'm saying. It's just like all those things are just going to come right on back. You're like, I didn't get sick this year.
I have never gone a period this long in my life where I didn't get sick. And that, what else, other than masks, could be doing that?
Well, you weren't in, you know, during the cold months, you weren't traveling anywhere. So, you know, if you stay away from people and you wear masks, it's what they do for immunocompromised people. That's what they do for cancer patients who are getting infusions and chemotherapy, right? I mean, wear the mask, social distance, stay away from people.
Well, guess they obviously work. And so all of these putzes who are out there going, "You're taking my freedom," and oh well, God, what a bunch of jerks! I just—they're
free to get sick if they want.
What's that? I'm sorry.
They're free to get sick if they want.
Well, they've been profiting. They've been free riding and profiting off of the people who have been getting their shots and, you know, have immunity and those sort of things. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, how long they can keep doing that. As we move forward,
did you guys, as I did, you know, if you want, you're into social media at all, it's like almost every day it was like, look at this idiot with who's raging about a mask at Trader Joe's. And so you'd look at that one and go, wow, what is up with people? And then a couple of days later, it's like, here's someone at Save-On going crazy. And actually, I almost never, I wasn't really aware of it at the time, but I looked at almost every one of those crazy mask conflict videos that they put out there. And I found them really fascinating, in that there was a similar mode to it. And almost in every case, the perpetrator was the Fox News watcher.
Shocking.
Shock. What a shock. Who had been inculcated into this, if you tell me to wear a mask, they're going to just go berserk. And they just, because they'd look for an excuse to go berserk, and they just call it about their freedom, because it's not about that. And as I've said before, you're ordered to wear pants. You have to, it's against law not to show your private parts in public. So you wear pants, and do you say that's against your freedom? No, you don't. So you're just making it up. It's just an excuse for you to rage against liberals or whatever. So anyway, I noticed that social media had gotten so good at identifying people that in almost every case that person was identified. Pretty interesting. And I'm wondering, I'm wondering if there's anybody months later who is thinking, I really was a jerk. I am ashamed of myself. Or if they're thinking, it was all worth it to have a freak out fest at Costco. Yeah. So anyway, that's one of the ways that I'm going to remember the pandemic is an endless series of I won't wear a mask and I'm going crazy in a retail store situation videos.
Well, I mean,
and
I mean, let's also be
and honest. The related ones like the ones the freak out on airplanes where they just had one. And of course, I watch this one because I can't get enough of them, where a bunch of the guy goes into the somehow got into the cockpit with the pilots, and they called to bring up some strong men to get.
They did not get in. They did not get in.
To open the door.
This is actually an off-duty flight attendant that did that.
What? The perpetrator was a flight attendant?
That's the last. That's the last one that you were talking about.
Wow.
No,
yeah, I didn't know that.
I think which is kind of funny, right? Because like, you know, this is the thing about all these air travel incidents. You know, tensions are high. You know, you still have to wear your mask. You're going on this trip, right? But you get all the way to the plane. You've presumably wore a mask. You've done everything to get onto the plane, right? Then that's where you have the freak out. That's where something snaps. And, you know, the only thing I can explain it, and I try to have some general understanding of why this is explicitly happening in society, because if you take a look at the data, you know, these incidents have doubled or tripled even from pre-pandemic years. I just think people have a lot of trauma that is coming out of the pandemic, right? We've been all traumatized by this event. We've had our lives upended, altered, over the course of a year and a half. You know,
that and the lack of socialization. You know, sorry to cut you off, but we're rusty.
Yeah, no. So speak more about that, Alex. I'm sure you've had examples of like just being so rusty, you know.
Yeah, no, it's but I mean, we've spoken about this numerous times. We hinted at this, how I think that those long lasting emotional scars and psychological damage is going to be seen for a number of years, if not quite a few months between now and the rest of the year. Something as dramatic as this, and I mean, we hit another very grim milestone today with the 600,000.
600. Yep.
Which is, I find it a little distasteful that some folks are out celebrating, like, oh, we don't have to wear masks in California anymore. It's like, against the backdrop of what just happened, you know, it's almost insulting to me. I mean, I do get it. You know, there's a sense of jubilation and relief that, okay, we can relax a little bit and everything looks fine. But as we know, there's still a latent danger lingering. I mean, this virus and viruses in general mutate, and we don't know what those what the next variant's going to do. And we hope that those vaccines are enough to afford that protection. But you know, still keep those masks handy, because we're in the warm months. So yes, this particular virus does not do very well in hot, drier climates. But I mean, what's going to happen once fall rolls around? What's going to happen once it's been 6, 7, 8 months after folks were initially vaccinated?
Yeah, the immunity still looks pretty good a year later from some of the data, at least the trial data that's been looking on there. But that being said, right, one of the things that the CDC made a recommendation to today is to watch out for that new Delta variant. And right now it comprises only about 6.3%, according to the CDC, of cases. But in Britain, it went from 6% to nearly 80%, you know, in a month. And they've had to extend their lockdown with a new surge of cases as they were right about to ease their restrictions. And a lot of that data is very shocking to take a look at. And that particular variant, right, is pretty nasty, right, Alex?
Well, yeah, it seems to be more contagious and requires less of an exposure. It also seems to lead to more severe symptoms. So don't take it lightly.
Yeah, no, I mean, if you take a look at the UK data from Johns Hopkins University, they hit when you talk about 14 days ago, right about 2 weeks ago, they had, you know, relatively been flat around 3,000 cases per day. But since that Delta variant took hold, 91% of UK cases are now with that Delta variant. And they went from 3,000 cases to a day to nearly 7,000 cases per day now because the strain is so much more virulent. And it's particularly bad because apparently, at least some of the preliminary data from about this Delta variant is that it escapes people, escapes the protection that you would normally get from the first Pfizer shot if you only got one shot. And so the United Kingdom strategy was everybody gets one shot, gives them about 70% immunity. They took the second shot, they would get up to about 95. Thankfully, in the United States, we got the full shot. We usually got the full series. So there's some hope that will blunt it. But it's kind of interesting. It's kind of interesting. And I want to get what you guys think about this as we're coming out of the pandemic. I don't think we're all coming out of the pandemic together.
No.
Right? No.
We weren't even in it together.
Right. Speak more to that, Alex. Speak more to that. What do you mean we weren't in it together?
People have very different circumstances. Some people have experienced different degrees of loss. Some have lost many, if not their entire families on account of that. There are serious disruptions to their jobs and loss of job, loss of industry. So to say, oh, we've been in it together, it's a gross simplification of the reality that people experience. And then personally, everybody processes things differently. And then this issue not only has a very physiological component, there's a mental aspect. Layered in with all the social context that is going on, the big social inequity issues that reared their ugly head last year. I mean, it was a traumatic year, and you cannot unlink it from the pandemic, and it was not experienced the same by all.
Yeah, and this recovery isn't being experienced by all either. It's one of the unique things that I keep thinking about. The pandemic is over for people who have been vaccinated, right? We have a fairly good protection. There's a very low likelihood that if you're vaccinated, you're going to die from coronavirus as we speak. New variants could change the equation, but we can potentially say that with some that if you're vaccinated, you have some you have fairly good protection. It's robust. You can go about your life. But the segment of society that isn't vaccinated, the unvaccinated people, the pandemic is still raging on. They're still getting infected at the same rate. They're still suffering the same death and poor outcomes that was previous to the beginning of the pandemic. So I don't know how people who didn't take the vaccination should think that the pandemic is over, right? I mean, it's just really, really crazy. And so Clark, what do you think about this? I mean, this whole thing has been highly politicized, right? You know, where we have like the most liberal states way ahead in vaccination have completely reopened. you know,
they're Vermont's also the most economically viable. And I mean,
well, Vermont isn't, but they achieved 80% vaccination. Ben and Jerry and Bernie. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, well, I you say it's highly politicized, and we're talking about the what potentially is the end or near the end or hopefully the beginning of the end, or not the end of the end. But if we go back, what I've noticed recently is this this going back to looking at what is the origin of it. And somehow Republican media outlets like the perennial idiot factory of Fox News is talking about, well, you know, now there's evidence that that the Wuhan labs that really did there might have really been a leak. And then that proves the President Trump right. Well, wait a minute. President Trump is a scattershot idiot shooting in every direction, saying things one day, contradicting himself the next, and so on and so forth. But this idea of how the virus was introduced to become the worldwide pandemic that it became, they seem to think somehow reflect positively on Trump. It does not. How the virus originated excuse the absolutely atrocious and irredeemably bad response that he brought to it from the White House? It doesn't at all. So that's another aspect. I see everything about it has been politicized. And in every case, the Republican response has been degenerate, incompetent, and criminally negligent. So I just don't see why they're even considered to be a viable political party anymore. And the pandemic should be it for them. Terrible.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't know. My big concern, and I'm a big Twitter follower of Dr. Bob Watcher from UC San Francisco. He's the chief of medicine at UCSF. He has a very interesting take on, you know, if you're immunized, you know, the pandemic is over, you can kind of not be as nervous. But if you're not, you need to be afraid. Particularly because of this Delta variant that's out there. We don't know if these variants are more deadly, but there's some evidence that they are. They're certainly more contagious. So what worked back in the fall may not work this year because it's just that much more contagious, right? And so there are some very serious concerns about those who don't have that additional sort of protection. And so I think for what he's saying, it's really important for us to think about this recovery in and post-pandemic life is two categories of people. Because if you're particularly in that latter category where you're not vaccinating, you're pretending like it's normal, it's not. It's still fairly deadly out there because the virus is still in wide circulation. And there are certain places in this country where you're beginning to see those rises and uptick in cases, because after Memorial Day, where everybody got together, you're seeing case increases in the South in particular, because there was just such low vaccination rates that occurred there. And so one of the things, right, and I'm cautiously optimistic, I think we'll be fine during the summer. Like Alex says, the virus doesn't like sunlight. It doesn't like summer. It doesn't like the humidity. But come fall, when the kids go back, when the temperatures get colder, people are inside more, and, you know, we may see a fall surge, and there may be some restrictions that come back in the fall. I wouldn't be surprised in the fall if we come back to doing more masking, doing some more social distancing in certain settings, just because there's going to be a lot more coronavirus around.
And which can be avoided if more people get vaccinated. And again, it's not so much that it's the vaccines are going to completely get rid of the virus, eradicate it entirely. There's this evidence of this chance of infection. Still after being vaccinated, but it's what happens to you, the protection you get from developing a more serious illness. And that's really what we should be shooting for. We don't want to get to the point where we overwhelm the health system again. And that's ultimately where all the, you know, the people were dying because of it. You just couldn't accommodate enough the surges that were happening. We should learn from the past.
And in this case, the immediate past, right? It's not the past of, like, you know, 20, 30 years ago, even. It's last year. And so I think that's what's going to be interesting. I think that's what's going to happen. Though I think places like LA, San Francisco, where the vaccination rate is pretty high, is around 70%, we'll probably see a lot less restrictions. That'll be the interesting thing, because I'm worried about rural America, because they're not the ones that didn't take the vaccine. But those are where the hospitals are the most stretched. And anecdotally, you're already seeing that with some reports from Missouri and St. Louis, where they're taking a lot of rural people in, because the pandemic hasn't abated in rural America, or in the America that hasn't taken the shot. And so, I mean, this is just much more, you know, fuel to the fire for people to take the vaccinations and take it seriously. Clark, I know you got some thoughts about this. I mean, people need to follow science.
We would be, you know, all these people, I've mentioned this before, these people that are attacking Dr. Fauci, which is a big deal. This is a big thing in the right wing, and Trump and their marching orders is like, let's go after Fauci. He's the target. And so everybody's doing this. It's a shame and disgrace and makes me angry, because Fauci has done more for this country than the entirety of the Republican Senate combined. And I'm outraged by it. Science is the where would we be without science in the face of this virus? People would be dying massively. Science is really the thing that we need to understand, celebrate, support, and employ to better mankind. And it could, where would we be without Jonas Salk and the science of the polio vaccine? There'd be a lot of people with polio and with, you know, crippled for life, so on. So, yeah, very much in favor of education, science, and the application of science to medicine. And I'm also for rational thinking, big surprise, and being logical and dealing with the problems that face humanity in a humane way. So that's I think one of the things the pandemic has done is to really make it clear how backward some people are in their thinking, who live in the most, well, what we like to think of as the most advanced country in the world, but maybe it isn't. Maybe it isn't.
But we can certainly reassert ourselves as such if we just invest and trust the science.
I agree with that. And actually, that's just a very simple way to put it, but it is that simple. So, yes.
Well, and the fact that science and epidemiology and the pharmaceutical companies were able to develop the vaccine within a year.
Unbelievable.
It's a credit to the scientific groundwork that has been laid over the last 20 years of studying coronaviruses and how it interacts with genetics. I mean, but if you really think about it, right? I mean, the last 30 years, cracking the human genome, being able to understand how all these proteins work. Alex is teaching. I mean, that's exactly what, you know, this is the kind of area that Alex works in. That's all led to this. And, you know, how bad is it that science education is in this country when we have, you know, 40% of the American public, I'm worried this thing was developed too fast, or no, it's been in development for 20 or 30 years by some very smart people, people who understood the nature of pandemics.
And just to, it's to speak to the divide that exists in communication between the academic realm and, you know, the medicine and the public. There's some distress there, and a lot of it's fanned by these very conservative news outlets that just basically propagate not only bad science, but disinformation. So they're doing the public a disservice by flat out spreading lies.
There's nothing really, you use the word conservative, but, and I've said this before, there's really nothing conservative about them. They're radicals, and they're not conserving anything. They're just reckless and irresponsible, and I think in many cases, not even speaking their own truth. They know it's manipulative. They're manipulating people to gain an advantage over them, and in some cases, to gain power and money. So it's one of the games in the right wing, which is, I think, a better description, is to how they out-stupid each other. That is the things that they say day by day. And let that, what's that, Ron Johnson, that senator? It was Antifa that went into the Capitol on January 6th, dressed up in Trump outfits and flags. And it's and how stupid do they think we are? Well, probably there are a lot of people that do buy that stuff. And so anyway.
Well, you know, he did recently have his YouTube account suspended finally because he was giving out false COVID-19 information.
Oh, he's an absolute jerk.
Finally, I'm like, of all the things that he said, this.
And it's hard. It's hard. What about Tom Cotton or what's his name? Louis Gohmert. And who was asking us, can we change the orbit of the moon to help with climate change? And how come my keys are sticking?
Look, all you need to know is like, this is also the party that supported, you know, Ron Johnson is also a member of the Republican caucus, and he was the one person still standing in the way as of 2 days ago from Juneteenth becoming a new federal holiday. Juneteenth, finally, he removed his opposition this year. Juneteenth will be a federal holiday coming forward, which is something that about we can actually
time.
I know, Alex, like an actual good thing that came out of a war, right? The emancipation of enslaved people, right? That's actually a holiday we can celebrate. I don't know how that's divisive in this country. But that happened also today in the world of good news. So we're getting to our one good thing a little early, but that's going to be one of my one good things. The other thing I wanted to talk a little bit about, Alex, you have brought this up, a very shocking to me. But the Pulitzer editorial board did not award a Pulitzer Prize for editorial cartoons this year.
Yeah, it was shocking. And the way I found out is because I'm a big Lalo Alcaraz fan, and, you know, shout out to Lalo for his amazing work this year criticizing the Trump administration and also just speaking truth about the pandemic. So very powerful stuff. And the other cartoonists too, in their own right, amazing. But it's just very shocking that did not happen. And I mean, I I think it's insulting to their craft, but all I can say is, you know, kind of let the work speak for itself. Don't this snub. I think many of us have experienced it in one way or another. I think we were joking about this in the pre-show, is this that I think we've all done really good things that we're proud of and that often don't go recognized, but it's, that stop us deter folks from still doing what's right and really pouring their effort into their craft.
Some of these awards are just political, man. Like I said, I never got a distinguished teaching award for as a teaching assistant. And I was like, that was a popularity contest. I can't win those.
Neither did I. I mean, I know I'm a very effective teacher, instructor. I mean, I've allowed students come back and tell me how much of an impact I've had. And I think some of it can be explained that I only work with them early in their career. So by the time they move on and it comes to nominations, I kind of forget about where I was, but it's not going to stop me from still doing my best and really changing what I do.
I don't know. How about you, Clark? Are you still upset that KUCR was the only voted number two college radio station in the country while University of Rochester was number one?
No.
I think at the time we had said it was due to the fact that Rochester has the New York market. We cannot effectively beat the New York market.
Well, I think I was very pleased to that UC Berkeley was number three.
What is it? KLX, number three. So we at least got that one over on them with that. Yeah, but, no. According to Michael Cannon, who's a reporter for the Washington Post, they apparently said neither one of them neither one of the finalists achieved enough votes to be able to be declared the winner of the majority. I mean, I it could be that they were all split. They were just all split within that. But that's still unfathomable at some point that they didn't award
the prize.
I mean, right?
Just, I mean, if they were all, let's say it was even number of votes. I mean, just split the nomination or split the prize. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is like the interpretation ends up being like, well, no one deserved it this year, and that's far from the truth. Although they did point out in this article that no awards were given in the same category. You know, in 1923, 36, 60, 65, and 73, no one won those years as well, which I find fascinating. No one won in 73. How could no one win in 73 at the height of Watergate? You know, that's just baffling to me that no one would have won. Editorial cartoonists would have won in during the I don't get it. I just, you know, That was interesting and fascinating. But coming back to your
Roger Stone, man.
What is that?
It's Roger Stone.
It's Roger Stone. It's got to be Roger Stone. Where on that Roger Stone scale of dirty tricks do you rank this, Clark, as a potential Roger Stone dirty trick?
You're talking about the Pulitzer Prize. Yeah. I'm not actually sure that if, unless they've made an official designation that they are not awarding it for a editorial cartoon, I wouldn't assume that it's not forthcoming.
No, so, they said they weren't going to award one.
Well, that does seem odd because there's so much talent out there, and obviously so much material. I mean, we had last year was one of the most historically important years. And it's the era where we were lurching more towards fascism than ever in American history. And that about 30% or maybe to high, a little higher of people in this country would actually give up
to talk about freedom, by the way, that they would actually literally give up their freedom to an endless dictatorship of Donald Trump, which is what it would be if he could overturn a legitimate election, which it was, and give it to himself. It would never come back. He'd be president for life, and then probably his mentally questionable son and other family members. That happened January 6th was the culmination of it. And by the way, that was Roger Stone right there. And that's certainly enough material for some pretty good political cartoons. So I'm not sure what the reasoning is there. And, yeah. So,
well, to kind of go back to January 6th, the Washington Post also had another article today, that looked at the email and the message responses on one of these audio chat platforms, that the Proud Boys had, after January 6th, once people had been arrested, and they display some real fear about the consequences of what they did and the disillusionment they experienced after being arrested and then being swept up and facing charges of 20 years.
When you do that to the United States of America, you threaten to take down the government and all the consequences that flow from that, which I think means if you took down the American government, you disrupted it like that, you would kill a lot of people, because that the government keeps is the foundation upon which people live their lives, upon which their energy is delivered, which keep the roads working, keep the food that goes from the farms to their families, and keeps medicine going. If you took that down, you would do a huge amount of damage. And also the idea that something, this dream of American democracy, which is the reason that this country is so successful versus other countries. That's it. That's the reason. It's not because it's America. It's because it's American democracy. Donald Trump, to throw away this fantastic achievement for a lowlife like Donald Trump is an outrage. And I think it should be considered treason, and the consequences of treason should be applied to those people that sought to overthrow the United States government on January 6th in the Capitol. And you can look it up as to what the punishment might be. And I think it's not inappropriate.
No argument there.
Yeah, I think it's very fascinating.
I saw something recently where they talk about how a lot of that base, those QAnons, the movement itself is starting to fade away, but there's still the danger. I think that you have more of the rabid fanatics that might do some very nasty, crazy stuff in the next few months. As you lose the people that were just kind of going along with the rest of the fellow minded masses, and the ones that are going to still have those harder convictions. I mean, that there's still a danger.
It's definitely there. I mean, that's what's very concerning about what's going on right now. Because there's been a lot of chatter about Trump being just, simply appointed back into office. I don't think that's going to happen. There's some very dangerous discussion.
No, it won't.
There's some very dangerous discussion going on right wing.
Of course, there always is.
That being said, though, the Biden administration has made domestic terrorism a key priority within the Justice Administration. They are
hiring, of course it should be.
They are hiring a whole division, up to about 50 civil rights lawyers and attorneys, and they're going to go after these groups and prosecute them. And I think that's beginning to settle in on that community, because, you know, according to Marshall Cohen of CNN, you know, they're beginning, these groups are beginning now, as there's been a lot of pressure put on them and the reality of what they have done. And now they are being charged with some real federal jail time and then for sedition. Right. We're talking serious crimes here. It may force some prosecutions. It may dismantle some of these groups and at least in the near term do some good. I don't think you forever kill these things, but I do think you have to go after them, and they're going after them at the moment. And so that may shake something loose in the tree if this continues going forward on there. And additionally, I mean, just the depravity of what the Trump administration was doing with the Department of Justice, you know, has been coming to light, using the DOJ to get text information from your political opponents. You know,
Bill Barr needs to be disbarred.
Well, yeah.
Disbarred and possibly put in prison.
Well, we haven't done that with John Yoo. I don't know if we're going to do
that. Well, John Mitchell was put in prison, and he wasn't nearly as bad as Bill Barr.
I mean, we'll see.
John Mitchell was the attorney general under Richard Nixon.
I mean, we'll see. But, I mean, that makes you look like it's a, you know, a banana republic, essentially.
Only if it's not a real crime.
Right. Right.
This is a real crime.
Yeah.
And what it makes you look like is a democracy with a rule of law.
Yeah. And so I think that's a very interesting sort of conversation that still needs to be had. I hope the Democrats hold hearings. I hope the Senate holds hearings. It's going to be very interesting to see kind of where all of this goes moving forward. But there was one lighter topic I did want to talk about, which was Elon Musk's and Tesla's reveal. Clark, I know you were watching it intimately, so you can give us a
review. I'm a car person.
No, you're not just a car person. You're a Tesla aficionado.
Well, I don't own a Tesla. I got to meet Elon Musk before he was famous. And he was clearly an unusual a personality, sui generis, unto himself. And I think he's changed. I think he's on par with Steve Jobs, is changing a number of different areas of human endeavor. We're talking space travel. We're talking tunneling, certainly automobiles. He also transformed banking with PayPal. And I think he's going to transform communications with the Starlink thing that he's the satellite internet thing that he's going to be putting in place. So I think I don't know why a lot of people enjoy mocking him. I think he's a fantastically important individual. So one of the things that I have been interested in since I was a child have been not just automobiles, but exotic automobiles. That would be, and this is not unusual. A lot of people had, you know, Lamborghini Countach on their walls, their bedrooms, teenagers growing up and stuff. And, you know, I certainly did that. And, but one of the things about exotic cars is there's two elements to them. Well, three, they're rare. They're very expensive. I think I'm going to do four. They're really, really fast and they're beautiful. They're works of art. In fact, the Museum of Modern Art in New York has a number of automobiles that Italians mostly that exemplify modern industrial art at its highest level. So there's a number of elements that I like about it. And the engineering is at the highest, you know, spare no expense stuff. So for, I think it's about $3 million, you can buy a Bugatti that will almost go as fast as the Tesla Model S Plaid Edition that was unveiled by Elon Musk. And speed is a measure. The exotic car standard, the highest, some of the fastest speeds attainable in the 1960s were like 0 to 60 in 6 seconds. All right. And that prevailed like maybe 5 seconds in the 70s. And, they got down, very expensive, the Bugatti Veyron, as I just said, $3.5 million, and you're down to 3 some seconds. The Model S Plaid Edition is 1.9 seconds, 0 to 60, for $130,000. $130,000 is extremely expensive. However, for a production car that'll be produced in the hundreds of thousands, this is incredible. He's genuinely amazing. I didn't like him smoking weed on the Joe Rogan show, and apparently he seems to actually like weed. So
he's self-medicating. The man's got to have something.
I guess so. But he's also it's not just that the cars are. The Tesla automobiles are impressive. How he's making them is the industrial skill applied to the construction. The machines that they are purpose building to form parts and chassis and so on. The electronics. They're not picking motors off of a supplier's shelf. They're designing their motors, and they're amazing. And I have to say, and also look at what he's done. He's totally changed the industry. I mean, the American manufacturers were languishing in their internal combustion modality. And he just changed it. And now you're seeing, these sleeping giants, GM and Ford, are producing electric vehicles. And look at the stock market results. They're showing big profits. He changed the industry for the better. And he's profited enormously himself. He's one of the richest men in the world. And he's reviving the American automobile industry. So I'm not going to mock this guy at all. I think he's extremely impressive, extremely. So anyway, that's my thought about the unveiling of the new Model S,
the plaid,
yeah, ludicrous
speed.
He has got a sense of humor.
My problem
for a new vehicle, but it won't be a Tesla. I mean, it's well out of a price range.
No, I have problems with Tesla in general because of the way they have treated their workforce, brazenly anti-union tactics that Tesla has undertaken, the underreporting of worker injuries, particularly at its plant in Fremont, California, by as much as 50%, according to Cal OSHA. And their revisions. This is not exactly being made with clean hands. Neither again was the American auto industry, but I would rather say that Ford and GM are a lot safer to work at than in a
Tesla. I don't know that that's true. I do know that.
Do you need to go see the Cal OSHA reports that find them?
No. Let me. I think that when you are. I'm not going to excuse worker mistreatment, but I'm not going to stipulate to it either. I'd have to study it, but I do know that they're trying to do a lot of things that have never been done before. So they're
innovating and so on,
which is fine when you're doing SpaceX and the rocket blows up on the launch pad. It's not killing its workers at the same time, or it permanently maiming the engineers that are trying to get SpaceX off the ground. That's the thing. You can look up if you want to look up the data, go look it up on the LA
Times reports. We'll discuss it next week.
I personally just think the cars have been ugly, and that's why I wouldn't buy them. Particularly the Cybertruck.
I will say the car. I like the car's sleek look.
Yeah,
the truck was an absolute monstrosity.
Yeah, the car is it is definitely a monstrosity. I mean, it doesn't look like a truck. I don't think.
I mean, it looks like the head of the robot in Day the Earth Stood Still. It looks like Gort the robot.
Or it looks like that robot from
I definitely wouldn't mind having one, because it's like it is, I would say it qualifies as it's the first exotic truck I have ever seen.
What?
Yeah, it's an exotic truck.
You know, our listeners can't see me and Alex's faces right now. We are stunned. We're absolutely stunned. It looks like an exotic. You know what? No, it's
like a Megatron. Out of Michael Bay movie, not the cartoons.
You know what? We're here. You and I are talking about this vehicle, and I'd say it's got controversial looks, but it looks also like it's pretty practical. And I bet they're going to sell a lot. And you're going to remember this conversation and say, yeah, I thought it was weird, and now it's commonplace. He will have changed another that way.
That will never be commonplace. I mean, look, you'll take a Ford for cheaper. Yes. For cheaper, you can get the Ford F-150 Lightning that's coming out, the electric one.
Yeah.
For approximately the same price, you can get the electric Hummer.
I'm never getting an electric Hummer.
Well, I'd still get the Tesla.
I would do it only because it would be such a reclamation of such an ill-fated vehicle, right? I mean, the Hummer was such a bad idea as a car. It was so gas guzzling and so unnecessary. But that we have redeemed it and turned it into a green machine, I would totally go for that idea. No?
Yeah, I actually think that the electric Hummer is kind of a genius marketing play on someone's part at GM, because the thing I actually don't think it's a thing anymore, but it used to be a thing that people would who were the real men who were, you know, using trucks and buying trucks would think of electric vehicles as something effete, that's something that tough guys don't get into. Well, guess what? The electric Hummer is so powerful and so impressive a vehicle with its sideways crawling ability. it is really won people over. And I think that the electric truck is just going to just explode. It's a fantastic idea. And to culturally overcome this, you know, kind of resistance that people who use trucks had to that without like the ultra macho Hummer, it was pretty smart. But then also, I think people in who use trucks for construction and such are going to somebody's going to buy one, and a guy's going to be powering all these tools from the battery. I know the F-150 Lightning does that. And I just think everybody is going to want one in that profession. And they're probably going to push out the internal combustion trucks pretty fast, because I think there's a strong appeal there. But if I was going to buy a truck, and I would love to get a truck, it would be the Tesla truck, the Cybertruck.
I don't know. All these names are the Ford Lightning seems the most straightforward name. I mean,
I know I would buy
like Tesla Cybertruck and then like electric Hummer. It just kind of sounds like, I'm sorry, I'm blowing your mind.
The double entendre. I'm sorry I blew your mind. That's the name of my new album.
Sorry I blew this. Anyways, we're coming to the end of the show. So what's your one good thing? My one good thing was Juneteenth. So that's there. How about you, Alex? What's your one good thing for this week?
Well, wait a minute. You can't just say Juneteenth. You have to tell people what Juneteenth is.
Juneteenth. No, we had talked about it earlier in the show if people were listening. No, Juneteenth is the day in which slaves in Texas, the Union Army arrived, gathered them all together. And
said, okay, you did talk about that. Sorry.
Which we did. Yeah. Alex?
So the freeing of slaves.
Yes. Well, the last time that they got – it was the last slaves heard because, you know, news traveled a lot slower in 1865.
Right, that's right. And you know why it's faster now? Science.
And that's Alex, my good thing right there.
Science is a good thing for Alex. All right. What's your good thing, Clark?
We mentioned the Pulitzer Prizes earlier, and so I think it was absolutely genius to give the Pulitzer Prize to Darnella Frazier, who filmed the murder of George Floyd. When I saw it, I maybe got through the whole thing once, but it was so hard to watch. Imagine how difficult it was to actually stand there and film that. The courage involved in that. That was journalism. That's telling the truth. That's the real thing. And that's why awarding the Pulitzer Prize to Darnella Frazier is my one good thing of the week.
Citizen journalism at its finest. So I think we'll leave it at that. For my friends Alex Cortez and Clark Price, thank you for listening. Tune in next time for more of the Happy Hour. All right. Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.